This is Hot Shot Archery's Outdoor Podcast.
The show starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is the Hot Shot Archery Outdoors Podcast. I'm Robin Parks, and I'm on the road back home from a tremendous Texas turkey hunting trip. With me in the vehicle that was on the trip is Derek Craig from New Day Outdoors.
Hey, everybody.
And also in the back seat, Keith Reen from Squincher Outdoors.
Hello, everybody. How you doing?
So what we're going to do this week is just kind of recap our trip, let everybody kind of live through us, and relay some of the excitement of the hunt. It was a phenomenal hunt. Guys, you agree?
Yeah, it was frustrating a lot of times and phenomenal a lot of times, which is the way a hunt should be.
Kind of one of those things when it starts out and you're thinking and you're all frustrated and that, and then when it's all over with, you can't wait to go back again.
Yeah, when I say it was a phenomenal hunt, I think overall it ended up being phenomenal. It was not what we've been accustomed to down in Texas. It was really frustrating to begin with the first couple days. The weather was horrible, really, for turkey hunting, cloudy and raining and downright chilly. And I'll let Derek talk about his favorite enemies, the Jakes.
Yeah, it was a Jake fest. And it's kind of funny. This is my second trip going back to this spot. And then Robin's third, and I don't think Robin ever saw Jake on your first trip, even, did you?
No, the first two trips, I never seen Jake.
I know that when Keith and I and Robin were there last year, none of us had seen a Jake. But this year, I was texting buddies, and I was like, yeah, there's like 9,700 and some odd. I made up these ridiculous long numbers, and I said, that might be grossly estimating the number of Jakes. It was insane. I've never seen as many Jakes in my lifetime. They seem to be just everywhere, and that makes for some great hunting next year in theory. But what happens is, especially when you're in earlier parts of seasons right now, when you've got mass amount of Jakes, they gang up on the toms, tend to run the toms off. So that's really where the frustrating part started. It made for some great video footage and was exciting. There's no denying that. But, you know, when you're hunting for longbeards, it can be very frustrating. So, yeah, that was it.
Yeah, right off the bat, Keith and I were hunting together. Keith was running the camera and I was hunting. And very first morning, first birds we saw, three Jakes came right into the decoys. And we didn't think too much of that. But a little bit later in the morning, had a nice tom answer, and he was kind of circling behind us and got his attention, and here he comes, and bam, here comes like a group of six Jakes, and they cut him off. And that was just kind of a preview of what was to come over and over and over. And I think that morning alone, Keith and I had 18 different Jakes in our decoys at different times.
Yeah, that first morning hunt where I was sitting, which was probably a third or half a mile from you guys. And I had five different longbeards through that morning hunt. And the Jakes just ran them scared. Every time one would come out, the longbeards would turn and run. And it was crazy. But I've seen that one other time a few years ago back in Kansas. We got into a lot of Jakes. And it was exactly the same. It makes for very frustrating hunting.
And also, to add to our frustration, Keith's favorite was the cows.
Yeah, I battled the cows pretty much the whole trip until the last day. Seems like everywhere I went, they, matter of fact, I'll get into the story a little later, but it actually cost me a bird, pretty certain. But yeah, I don't know. They really like the decoys. They like to lick them. They like to hang around them. They like to scare you to death, like you're going to step on your camera equipment. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, we were really hoping to just keep all hunting together, filming each other, and it got to be so frustrating that it didn't take too long that we figured out we needed to split up to maximize our chances, and everybody was self-videoing, and that ended up working out okay, but I think we all would have had more fun if we could have spent a little more time hunting together. But I think by the first 2 days, I'm having a hard time remembering what day it was I killed that first bird. But
well, you and I killed our first birds on the same morning, and that would have been on morning number 3.
Yeah. Right. So the first 2 days, our best chance between all of us, I guess, was a bird that we saw, me and Keith, when I say we, running. It was actually turning the tables, and he was bullying the Jakes in the area and finally convinced him, took some different calling, in fact, to get his attention, and he finally did come around and phenomenal footage and would have been a golden opportunity, but he seen me draw, and I did take a desperation, you know, like 25-yard shot, which is, you know, Hail Mary, basically, with a bullhead for me anyways, and missed him. But after that, things, the weather changed, and that really, I think, was a big difference, at least in how much tom activity we seen and gobbling throughout the day. And all the things that we went to Texas for got a little better with the weather, don't you guys think?
Yeah, I think day 3 was probably the best overall turkey day that we had. I know, I mean, I'm biased, that's the day I shot my bird, but I think overall we heard more gobbling. We didn't see the volume of the Jake. Well, I guess you guys did because you were sitting in Jake Central, but yeah, definitely it just felt better turkey hunting and was definitely the most enjoyable day as well.
Yeah, that's the day that Keith, you got your first real chances and got both messed up, right?
Yeah, what basically happened was I had a tom that came in very quiet. I was kind of on a road, kind of a what I call a logging road, trail road, whatever you want to call it.
Sendero in Texas terms.
Oh, yeah. So yeah. I was sitting on a Sendero, and basically he came up over my left side, kind of left shoulder area, never said a peep, and he drummed. It was the first time I heard him, but by the time he did that, he was about maybe 6 steps from the blind. So, you know, with me, you know, adamant about getting it on film, my priority, by the time I got the camera fired up and ready to go, he had already passed between me and the decoys to my right and was already out of range for me to shoot. So that was I don't know if to call it a blown opportunity, but one of those things that just happens with turkey hunting. Sometimes they're, you know, and especially in a blind, they can be on you in no time. And that was one mess up, I guess you would say, on my part. A little later, I guess a couple hours later, I was working a gobbler that he seemed like he was just raring to come in. He was by himself, and I felt very confident I was going to get a shot at this bird. I was ready to go, camera rolling, everything's good. I heard a noise to my right. I look over. Guess what? A couple cows coming in. They went right to the decoys, started nosing them and licking them, and I kind of was watching the tom, and he didn't like that at all. He just froze up and kind of turned, gobbled one last time, and walked away. And that was kind of really my 2 best chances until the last night. So, yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the cows.
Yeah, but you were kind of like right in the thick of why we went to Texas that morning with just a ton of birds all over you, right?
Yeah, actually, Robin and I did a little scouting after, I guess that was, day 3, I guess, when we walked up there? I don't know. They all run together.
I think it was day 2 when you
guys
walked
evening,
up
yeah,
there.
We yeah. went looking for somewhere to get away from the Jakes.
Yeah, so basically we had been, you know, hunting in a spot that we were seeing a ton of birds, but we heard more gobbles kind of across the creek and kind of up a hill, what we called the windmill area, because there's a windmill up there.
Huh, imagine how that works out.
So we decided to take a little scouting trip, and we walked up there. I just fell in love with the area immediately. A big oak mott, I think they call them in Texas.
Yep.
Walked around a little bit, saw a whole bunch of wing feathers and turkey poop everywhere. And, I mean, it was blatantly obvious that was one of their main roosting areas. And so I was pretty pumped to hunt near there the next day, or actually that evening, I guess. And so, you know, that night they roosted in there, and I can't even tell you. I'm easily, you know, I don't know, if I had to guess, 150 to 200 birds were within 100 to 150 yards of me that night roosting. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things you just don't see very often, especially, you know, where I'm from in Missouri, that's unheard of. So,
yeah, there were definitely a lot of jakes that same evening. I was sitting down from you probably, oh gosh, I don't know, 500 yards or so. And, I think it was 18 jakes roll through, you know, in that area. And just to sit in one spot and have 18 jakes roll through like that, you know, is a lot. But where you were at, you were like in literally where every jake in it felt like the world lived. It was crazy how many birds were in there.
Well, one thing that kind of stood out to me with this trip is, it, you know, the turkey hunting experience I've had. I've never seen jakes so aggressive and so vocal. You know, the gobbling, really hard to tell the difference between. Normally, you know, when you hear a jake gobble, it just sounds completely different. And almost like their voice is cracking. But these guys, man, they could just ramp it up, and it was very hard to tell whether you had, you know, toms around you or just jakes again.
Yeah, there were some real throaty ones that had you fooled. I mean, there were a lot of times I would have bet money it was a tom coming, and then they step out, and it's two or three jakes. And you're like, man, yeah, I mean, you would have bet it was a tom. So
yeah,
we saw some jakes that had, you know, longer spurs even. Not the, like, I mean, they weren't, you know, half, well, they might have even been close to half inch, but these were some big birds for jakes. You know, it was hard even looking at their tail fans because they weren't notched as prominently as, you know, say what we're all used to in eastern birds.
Right.
You could definitely tell on the beards, but then again, you know, you get a long beard that gets beard rot or something, and that can fool you. So it was interesting.
Well, and I've seen, you know, jakes go into half strut and stuff like this, but these guys, they were full strut, drumming and carrying on.
Oh, spitting and drumming. It was crazy.
Yeah. So that was a little different for me. I'd never seen that.
Yeah, that, I think every one of us at times got really excited because we had a bird gobble and come strutting in, and only to find out when it got really within 20 yards or so that, oh, another jake it is. And
yeah, definitely.
But we finally broke the ice that night that Keith sat in that near that oak mod. I went down, I think it was about 350 yards, if I remember right. I checked it on the map, but below him near the creek. And Derek, you were with me whenever we went and looked at that
you
spot.
You and I went down there and looked at it.
I just immediately said, oh, I need to sit here. And that first evening was kind of a bust for me. I didn't hear any gobbling. I didn't see any birds. But the next morning, come to find out, there was quite a few birds roosted around me. I just didn't know it, and had action all through the morning, just not quite happening for me. I had a bird coming in, and of all things, in the middle of nowhere, Texas, a trespasser in a truck drove right through my decoy spread and screwed that bird up. I was pretty pissed off. I thought it was a farmhand or something, and so I didn't stop him or say anything, but come to find out, there was not supposed to be anywhere near us, and the ranch owners didn't even know who they were. But finally, that spot paid off, and exactly what I had hoped was that the creek that was 100 yards away, that birds would travel up and down that creek, and heard a hen calling, and so I called to her, and she answered, and then a bird gobbled with her, and just a pretty neat hunt that I could see him out there, and he was definitely not going to leave her, even though he was answering me every time. So I just kind of flipped it around and started calling to her, and every time she'd answer, I'd answer back. And make a long story short, 20 minutes later, there were 25 yards in closing, and that hen saw my DSD hen, and she bristled up and just marched right in. And the closer she got headed for that hen, the closer she got to my DSD Jake that was there, the more pissed off that gobbler got. And when she got about 5 feet from that Jake, he come running in and just immediately jumped on the Jake. And then I just waited for the right time when he jumped on him the second or third time, got drawn and made a good shot. And it was just like total relief, because I mean, we all went down hoping to shoot two, three, or maybe even four birds. And the next thing you know, we're all talking to each other saying, well, if we can each just get one, this will be good. And then that was the same morning you got your first one, right, Derek?
Yeah, it was. And yeah, you're exactly right. You know, we had had so much success in the past years that, man, we had our hopes up. So we were, by the end of day two, we were like, if we each get a bird, man, this can be great. But yeah, so that same morning, well, back up the day before when we were scouting, right before we'd found down in that oak mott where you killed your bird, we had one ridge over, I was looking on Google Earth and there was a bowl, and it was really big. And so we had gone back there and looked, and there was a little buggy trail of some sort going down into the bottom. And when we got in the bottom, it was just this lush green area. Looked like there was a lot of good trees in there and everything, and thought, man, this could be a good place for turkeys. And I think even Keith spotted a longbeard, if I remember right, across the other side of it. And so when we wrapped up day two and I was incredibly frustrated, I think we were driving out, and I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I said, well, let's just pull in here. And we went down in there and we set a blind up, and nothing. It was roosted in there. So yeah, so morning three, I get in there and can't really remember. I think, I had a big group of hens come in, probably an hour and a half into daylight. And it seems like it was seven or eight hens just all showed up at one time, and they milled around and did their thing and everything. And I kept hearing gobbles off in the distance, a lot of them. So I had some high hopes, and I really felt confident that if I sat there long enough, it just seemed like a longbeard had to show up. So, but it was close to 10 o'clock in the morning, and I was just sitting there, and I just heard a gobble, and it seemed like it was somewhat close. So I got on the call, and I hit my slate call a few times, and it was at least a double gobble. So I knew at least there was two birds there. And that I kept telling myself, and I know we had talked about it the day before, was what we needed to find was a group of longbeards, either two or three together, and their numbers, by what I've seen in the past, when Jake's are being real aggressive, that would be probably the ticket and the way to seal the deal. And so they were back there gobbling, and finally they stepped out at probably, I'm going to say, right, 250, 300 yards up on the rise above me, and lo and behold, it was three longbeards all together. And so I got on the call a little bit, and the one never broke strut outside of gobbling, and they were triple gobbling every time I'd hit the call. And so they'd kind of work their way down, and I'd call a little bit. And finally, when they'd cut the distance in half, I just laid down the call because I knew it was probably game over at that point in time, that they were going to, make it to the decoys. So yeah, so they came down in, and again, the one never broke strut. They kind of circled out in front of me around a little tree area, and I don't know, at probably about 10 to 13 yard range. And then the strutter, he broke off from the other two, and he came right into the decoys. And I was running three DSD hens and the DSD mating motion pair, and he just came beautiful. It was absolutely gorgeous. The footage was excellent. And came right up there, and at about 6 yards, I waited till when he was fully strut. I waited till he was kind of quartering away and his head was partially hidden. I came to full draw and put the pin on him. And when he kind of turned around and gave me a nice broadside shot, I put it right on the middle of his neck and let a Magnus bullhead fly, and he dropped right there in his track. So
yeah, that footage is phenomenal.
Yeah, so I was really happy with it. I was a little bit bummed. I had a couple GoPros out in the decoys, and one of the problems we were experiencing from day three and four in particular is it got so hot, we were having GoPros overheat and shut down on us. And so I think that's probably what happened. So I was bummed I didn't get footage on the GoPros, but I got my main camera footage and one in the blind of me shooting and stuff. So, but yeah, it was a heck of a hunt. I was so happy at that point, because by the end of day two, we just all felt like, man, somebody taking us out back and just whipped us. it was bad. So
yeah, we ought to talk about, before we continue to talk about the fun parts of the hunt and the exciting parts, is talk about the work we put in and let's paint the real picture for everybody to understand what kind of hours we were keeping. In other words, everybody that follows me has seen my Texas pictures, and of course Derek and you and Keith both were there last year, and everyone probably thinks, you know, we got a super cake hunt, and I'm sure that we paint the picture on social media that makes it seem like someone's holding our hands and everything's easy peasy down there. But keep in mind, this isn't an outfitted hunt. It's just we're paying to be on some private land, and we're pretty much on our own other than advice on where the ranch owners have seen birds. But I mean, we're all wore out right now, and there's a reason for that.
I'm beat. I'm absolutely beat right now. Yeah. It is sun up to sundown. After sundown, we are still going to moving blinds and setting up for the next morning and everything. But yeah, every morning, you know, you're rolling out of the cabin at 6 a.m., trying to get out there, obviously, for that thing every turkey hunter wants, and that's that sunrise and the gobbles on the roost and listening for it, knowing full well that probably the better turkey hunting time is 9, 10, 11 o'clock, but we all want to be there. So you're out, and then we would typically hunt till noon, a couple days, 1 o'clock, and you get down. Of course, and there's three of us, so we got to round each other up because, like Robin, you had said, we split up out of kind of the aggravation and the need to try and get birds killed. And so then you're using that time from 1 to say 4 o'clock to get blinds moved, go look for birds, scout new areas, and hopefully have a bologna sandwich thanks to Keith's wonderful shopping. hopefully you slide in a bologna sandwich, and then we're back out there, and really we should be back out there at 2:30, 3 o'clock, but most days we were back out at 4 because it just the logistics of what we were doing. And then you hunt all evening, and then it gets dark at 8:30-ish or so. And then you're rounding everybody up, and you're like, okay, Robin, where are we going to move your blind to? Keith, where do you want to hunt? What's your, and of course, everybody's frustrated. So it's very hard to make decisions as well, because you start second guessing your every move in these situations, you know? But I mean, what's your take on it, Keith?
Yeah, well, then it doesn't even end there. So, you know, we go out and get our blind set up, get our equipment in there, so we make it easier on ourselves in the morning. And then we finally get back to camp, probably 10, 10:30. We haven't even had dinner yet. So we try to get some dinner, and I'm very OCD about my equipment and camera stuff. So I'm trying to make sure every battery I have is charged, and going through SD cards and trying to get some footage organized to keep that straight. Next thing you know, it's 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, and we got to get up at 5:30, 5:45 again. So, we literally were going on maybe 3.5-4 hours of sleep every night.
Yeah. You know, we joked about it because we know it, when all of us, when we leave and go on a hunting trip, you have family or friends like, going hunting, you know, hanging out, vacation.
Yeah.
And it never seems to be that way. I'm not sure I've ever gone on a hunting trip where it feels like I went on a vacation. They all seem like I'm going to work.
No, yeah, I thought about that several times. As much fun as I was having, I kept thinking, man, it's going to be nice to get home and relax from this vacation.
Exactly. But it's so much fun. When you put in that much work into what you're doing, when you do connect and you got that success, it just makes it all that much better.
And as everyone hears our navigation talking, that's because the navigation had locked up, and I'm not sure how long we've been going the wrong way. We've obviously missed an exit.
Yeah, that's just par for the course for this trip.
Yeah, exactly. But, well, I think what was killing me was...
Turn left.
I think what was killing me was going back and either eating late or going back and regrouping, but going out in the middle of the night, basically, and moving blinds. And
last night when we went back out last night and moved that one set up, I was done. I was just so exhausted at that point in time.
Yeah, we found, what do you call him, four-year-old Derek? Got a little frustrated, taking down a blind.
Four-year-old Derek had a complete meltdown out there in the dark. There were definitely, I created new bad words.
Yeah, Robin and I just kind of kicked back. I was trying to get Robin to go get the camera, but I don't think he had the guts to turn it on.
Yeah. Yeah, that was quite the display, but I can admit that probably all three of us felt like that more than once on this trip. But so yeah, enough of the bad stuff. I guess let's get into some more of the better stuff, because
you didn't mention the heat.
The
last 2 days we're talking about 100 degree temperatures, and I'm gonna give a little selfless plug here. If it wasn't for Squincher, I think these guys would have been in a big hurt. So that was kind of like medicine for us on this trip.
Yeah, it's not often that one bottle of water or Squincher is enough. And I had an afternoon, I took three bottles out with me, and I drank every bit of it.
And probably never peed either, because you're sweating it all out. That was the problem.
But it just goes to show that even though I think the air temperature those 2 days was right at 90, but it probably easily was over 100 in the ground blinds.
Oh,
but
easy.
Even though that heat was there, it was still during the heat of the day was the best hunting. And it just goes to show that wherever you're at, what's normal for weather is what the turkeys are going to be most active in. And that's normal for down there. And so when it was cool, or actually downright cold, in the 40s in the morning, that didn't sit well with those birds.
No, those birds actually like that heat. You know, and I've heard a lot of people say just what you did as well, whether it's deer hunting or turkey hunting or whatever, and that animal won't move when it's in these conditions. And that animal lives in that, and those turkeys are used to that kind of heat, as well as the deer. How much deer activity did we see when it was 90 degrees?
And,
it was
crazy. And hogs.
And hogs.
Yeah.
You know, everybody thinks so. Hogs won't move in the heat. They just lay in. Hogs were moving. Deer were moving.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's just part of being in this part of the country. I mean, it's kind of those things. If an animal's not going to move in the heat in Texas, he's not going to move ever.
Yeah, so going back to moving blinds at night, that kind of led to my second bird, because we were sitting around eating and talking about where I was planning on going the next morning, and that I'd kind of said, well, I'm going to sleep till about 7 and then go out and put my blind up and hunt the rest of the morning. And Derek was kind of like, oh, well, let's just go put it up now. So he kind of motivated all three of us. We all loaded up and took the truck out at It had to be 11:30 at night.
Oh, yeah. It was super late.
And maybe even midnight. And here we are out there in the headlights putting up a blind. I knew there was an area, and I knew I wanted to be in that area in a couple specific locations to look at. So we looked at them, got out with flashlights and checked for tracks and turkey poop and set that blind up. And that's what I got in the morning. And it's a little frustrating because there was no birds anywhere near me gobbling, none, at daylight. I could hear a couple way off, but I just decided that I wasn't going to budge from there, and hoping for that midday cruising tom, kind of like what happened with me the day before with the tom and the hen. And it worked out pretty well because, again, about 10:30 or 11 o'clock, I had a bird answer me. And then I called some more, he answered some more, and it was pretty obvious he was coming. What wasn't obvious, what ended up happening was there was three Jakes in the lead, and they came right into my decoys, and one started thumping on my decoys. And I was a little bit concerned because behind the Jakes was the hen that the gobbler was following. And so I wasn't quite sure that it was going to work out. But kind of the same deal as the other bird I killed. The closer the hen got to the Jake decoy, the more fired up that gobbler got. And I could tell then if she was going to walk right past her to my decoys that he wasn't going to allow that. And sure enough, he came in and did the whole thump on the Jake act. And pretty exciting. And even more exciting was the Magnus bullhead took his head completely off clean. That was pretty awesome to see and exciting. And of course, I texted you guys. We finally were hunting where there was some signal, and I was able to text. And as it jumbled up, head just rolled or something like that. But it was all misspelled and everything as I had shaken fingers trying to text.
Yeah, you know, that another frustrating part to interrupt that was the cell service. Like, there, we couldn't communicate a lot of the strip. That was a whole nother challenge we had.
Yeah, modern day problems, right?
Yeah, first world problems, exactly.
Yeah, but it's true, though, when we're all sharing transportation and hunting, you know, literally miles apart and not knowing how the other guy is doing and whether they're ready to go or not go. So we were kind of just setting specific times, and sometimes that meant we were waiting on each other, but at other times it seemed to work out perfect. And of course, just like you said, it seemed like that led to us running late for the afternoons every day. But overall, I mean, we did the best we could with that.
That second bird you killed, that spot, when you go back and look at that, and I know we kind of just chose that. We knew about that spot from years past, but we just kind of chose that on a whim as to, you know, throwing a dart at a dartboard. But when you look at that spot, logistically, that spot just makes a lot of sense where it was located. There were some roost trees around, but there weren't any birds roosted that night there. But it was in a great transition area. It was open in the middle of this you know, thick brushy cover, and it was a spot where those birds could get out there and strut and do their stuff. And it was a great choice. And in retrospect, I was very, very jealous that you chose that spot, but you made the right choice. That was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, essentially it was an oasis of a food plot in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. And it's one of those, I think, that most people, and myself included, even though we knew about it, you just kind of overlook it. You're like, yeah, maybe, but it turned out, it worked out perfect.
Yeah,
you actually had more birds after you killed that one.
Yeah,
didn't
I did.
You?
I after I killed that one, I got out and got the bird picked up and stashed out of sight. And 20 minutes later, I had a bird answer me, and kind of in the same area the first one answered. And then he gobbled again and really close. So I just got ready, and I could hear him spitting and drumming. And I finally peeked around the corner where he was kind of coming from behind me, and full strut coming. And I mean, I've got the camera recording, I got the bow in my hand, and I'm thinking, man, I'm gonna double up here. And he comes strutting right into the decoy, and I just about ready to start thinking about when to draw, and notice his beard was a little short. And sure enough, it was just one of those Jakes, just like we had talked about earlier, that you gotta almost study to know if it's a Jake or a 2-year-old. And I looked it over and looked it over. I could see he had spurs that were at least half inch, and almost undoubtedly would have shot that bird had I not have just killed one, you know, 10 or 20 minutes before. We looked at the footage, and I mean, it was, looking back, not in the heat of the moment, it's pretty easy to tell he was a Jake. But
yeah,
I mean, I'm glad I didn't shoot, but it was still an exciting hunt. Like, you know, that's the kind of bird that you think, Jake or no Jake. I mean, he played the game and made it exciting, and there wouldn't have been a thing wrong with shooting him. But even after that, I think it was 12:30, I think, another bird answered me and came to the edge of that food plot, but this is how hot it was that by then. He walked up behind a cedar tree that had about a car hood size spot of shade, and he stood in that shade and gobbled at me and strutted and wouldn't budge out of that shade to come over to my decoys. And he finally got tired of that, and he stayed in the brush in the shade instead of coming out in the heat. So while I do say that in the heat of the day was great, I mean, that was getting to be extreme, that 1 o'clock to about 3 o'clock time period.
That was what, morning three, or no, that was morning
four.
That
was four, right.
Morning four,
right,
that you killed him. Because day four was pretty rocking for you. It's like you bought a lottery ticket that day and just went to random gas stations to buy lottery tickets
and won on
each one of them.
Yeah, because we were all starting to, you know, we could feel the end of the hunt coming, and we were kind of getting frantic. So After we got my bird in the cooler, we went on this like mission of a quick scouting session to find everybody some new spots to hunt, and we moved everybody, and I let Keith and Derek. I mean, I was putting them where I'd killed birds on my trips before areas, especially the one I put Keith in. In my head, he was sitting in the best place on that ranch that I know of.
Yeah.
And
I didn't feel bad at all about taking it, because I was coming to the conclusion that Robin literally could have put a blind up in the back of the pickup truck and he'd have had a gobbler in his lap by the end of the day.
So I didn't feel sorry for him. Yeah, it was starting to feel that way. But so after we got you guys set up, and I gave Derek a choice at the last two spots, let him pick his, and I went and sat somewhere I had never been before. We all thought it looked good when we found it. It had a little water hole and an intersection of two senderos. And to make a long story short, 20 minutes after I climbed in that blind for the evening hunt, I had one down, another one lost his head, and it was pretty unbelievable, because I sat down, got my camera gear ready, called, got an answer, called again, got another answer, didn't even call again, and had a double gobble 50 yards from me, and then I could see them. It was two birds, and they both came in, and I mean, just like that, you know, like feeling like this trip is just not going well in one day, just making a heck of a trip for me. Unfortunately, things didn't go too well for you guys that night.
No, my night was short and sweet. It was, to be summed up, Keith's favorite critter on that ranch. It was bumper to bumper cows as far as I could see all night. I got out of the blind, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 times, something like that, chucking rocks at them, trying to run them out of there. It was, at one point, I looked each direction and I could not see more than 20 yards. Because it was cows as far as I could see, and I just knew it was over at that point. You'd killed a bird, and I was just like, I couldn't believe it. Yeah. I was so frustrated.
I felt bad texting you guys, another bird down, being that quick. I know you guys are like, oh, baseball minute sitting in your blinds.
So that was my train wreck, and the whole time I'm sitting there, jealous that you had killed a bird, and jealous because Keith is sitting in probably, not only was Robin, He undersold this. He said it's the best place to kill a turkey on the ranch. It's probably the best scenic spot on that entire ranch as well. And me being a guy who loves to shoot photos and video, I probably would have spent more time in Key Spot out of the blind shooting photos and video of just stuff than actually hunting. So, I mean, Keith had the best of all worlds, yeah. You know, and your night ended up being pretty good then, didn't it, Keith?
Yeah, so it did. It started out slow as far as turkeys are concerned. I wasn't hearing anything, and I was about to text Robin and say, I thought you said there was birds in this area, but I had several hogs that came down. I was kind of describe it a little bit. It's basically, I was in a creek bottom, and so, you know, I had the creek bed going up on both sides. It was kind of a little hole there, and it was just beautiful. The creek running through, I could hear the water. I watched ducks play in the creek. I had a group of four hogs that came by. And, of course, I did see a few cows, but they left me alone that particular time. Saw several deer. And finally, at the end of the evening, yeah, things picked up a little bit. You know, Robin told me, you know, from his experience where they were going to roost. And, you know, it was pretty obvious there's some big dead oak trees and some live oaks that just looked, it was the epitome of a roosting site. So, sure enough, right about dark, things started kind of moving through. So, yeah, that was the most eventful evening. A group of hens came through by themselves, and they kind of milled around in front of me for a little while, and then they kind of started to wander off, and then a group of jakes come up. Well, kind of what we described earlier, there was three or four of the original ones, and I could see one kind of holding back, and he was in full strut. And so I was 100% convinced this was a tom, a mature tom. He came in and realized he was another one of those Jakezillas that we were talking about. And I'm like, you know what? This is my last evening. I might just take this son of a gun. So he came in and put on a great show. He beat the daylights out of my decoy, and I don't know how long it lasted. It seemed like at least, you know, 3 or 4 minutes of nonstop thumping. And so finally I just said, I'm gonna take this bird. I'm not gonna go home empty, and this is great footage. And so I did. I took that bird, and we hunted a little bit this morning with no luck, so I'm really glad I did. So at least I'm going home with a beautiful bird. And you know, like I said, it's kind of like almost like golf. You can play a really bad round, but if you play that 18th hole good, you want to go back the next day. So I'm ready to go back. So that was my trip.
Yeah, so while Derek is sitting texting us about mother effing cows and this is bullshit, and
literally, I was texting
like one of the best evenings that I've ever had turkey hunting, because I killed that one right off the bat. Then I had some jakes come in and beat up on my decoy, had some turkeys come in and drink, and had some hogs come in. And then I had another bird answer me, and he was coming, had him 50 yards strutting. I mean, he's on his way, and I'm thinking, that's it. I'm going to tag out. This is unreal. And here comes a group of three jakes. They run him off. And so now I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to be too pissed off about that. I've got three down. And then a little while later, had another bird answer me. Same deal. He's coming in on string. I mean, he's coming. And he's out in the road. He sees the decoys. He's full strut. He's just walking right in. And I'm thinking again, man, I'm actually going to tag out. This is going to be number four. And of all things, and you guys tell me if you've ever seen this. Bird strutting in, two deer step out, look at the turkey, and literally both of them run at the turkey and run him off.
I've never seen that.
I just was like, you know what? Number four is not even meant to be. So I'll be happy with my three. That's exactly what I was thinking. And in fact, that's why I called Derek. I mean, there's still a little bit of light left, but I was pretty sure turkey activity was done. I went and got Derek, and we set him up for what we thought was going to be a great short morning hunt before we headed home, but it didn't turn out that way.
No, it didn't. But you know that I would, if we had all day, I would have sat at that spot all day, because I know at some point birds would have shown up. I just think that this morning just happened to be not the right morning, which is kind of way, and we probably all felt this way to a degree, but I kind of felt a lot of my hunt was that way. Was I felt like I was a day late and a dollar short at every place I sat, you know, but I was in birds, you know. I mean, this morning I had three hens come in, and the one, she beat the crap out of my hen decoy and even went and attacked my Jake decoy. And she was there for over an hour and a half. I mean, she beat that hen decoy up to the point where I'm going to have to send it back to Dave Smith decoys and have him repaint her head. There's no paint left on her head. It was insane. She was strutting just like a tom does. And she even had this short little choppy gobble she was doing. It was nuts. So every sit really was good. I mean, outside of the, you know, the yesterday evening when it was Cow Alley. And I did go out the one morning in an area that none of us had ever been to. I think that was morning two. And I went there just kind of rolling the dice, and that didn't pan out. I never heard or saw a thing. But outside of that, even though the frustrating hunts that we had, there was turkey activity. I mean, it's always fun watching Jake's come in and beat up decoys, or hens engaging the decoys. It just becomes frustrating because it's not the bird you want. But
yeah, we had put it this way, we were plenty entertained.
Oh yeah,
even when we weren't killing. I mean, I mean, I think we were the whole time trying to remind each other of, you know, what was going on around us, and to try to stay positive, just because a lot of people, most people would really enjoy the chance to be around that many birds like we were.
That's just it. It's easy on a hunt like this to come down and let the frustrations of trying to kill two or three or four longbeards bring you down in the hunt. But in reality, when you look back at it, and you, like, I'm from Indiana, you know, our hunting's okay. I mean, you guys are from Missouri. It's been good, but it's on the downhill. And you compare it to friends or people you know that hunt, they've never seen, there's so many people have never seen the turkey action that we just witnessed in 4.5 days of hunting. And so it's easy to let the frustration bring you down, but that you got to have a reality check and go, man, this is just a blessing to be here and to witness all this stuff and, you know, take it in. So I shot, and I know Keith and Robin, you probably did too. I shot just tons of video footage, and it's stuff that probably will never even see the light of day, but man, it's stuff I can go back years from now and go, wow, check out, you know, this hen was in here for, you know, 30 minutes. And I mean, a lot of people just never see that type of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, Keith. I was going to say, Derek just mentioned it. I was going to bring that up as like, you know, as frustrating as it was, I know when I go home, I'm going to have a lot of, going to have to dedicate a lot of time going through stuff and making sure I don't end up deleting or forgetting about something that was pretty cool, whether it be a hog or a deer coming through or Jake's fighting. And I mean, we got a ton of stuff. So, you know, I was going to mention that too. You guys, you know, we'll have a chance to see some of the stuff. We all three have, you know, YouTube channels. I'm sure we're going to be editing some of these hunts and putting them up. And I'm just telling you right now, it's worth taking a look at. And, in 2021, we'll have a couple Squincher Outdoors TV episodes dedicated to just this hunt alone. It was as bad as we kind of talked about it being. We still got enough for that I'm very confident we'll have two complete TV shows full.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I want to make sure that both you guys get, when we wrap this up, that you both plug your social channels and what you got going on too, because you've both been on before, and I'm not sure we've really done that for our listeners, but I want you both to have the chance to do that. So, but back to the footage, even last night, so I killed a bird. I had two other times in which I was working times, but I also had, for example, a Jake that went around and around and around my hen, spinning her like a merry-go-round for literally 10 or 15 minutes without stopping. And then he did some nasty things and left a deposit on the ground by her. And you don't see that very often either, but...
Well, I don't know. Derek, the other night, after Tuesday, he was missing his wife pretty bad.
Oh, nice, nice. No, but I had the same thing. I had a Jake. I can't remember now. It's all running together. I think it was the evening of day three. And, yeah, he did the same thing. And it was 15, 20 minutes. And he fell in love with that hen decoy. And he was so frustrated. At times, he would just lay down on the ground next to it and start panting. And his two buddies were sitting out there in the flats, probably, I don't know, 60, 70 yards away, just strutting and gobbling like, hey, buddy, come on. She's not giving it up. You got to catch up with us.
Yeah.
But he did the same thing. And it's, you know, it's that kind of stuff that there's just a lot of turkey hunters that don't see that or don't see it to the frequency as what we've witnessed, you know, in the last 4.5 days.
It's not an overstatement to say that we had like a lifetime of turkey hunting experiences wrapped up in like 4.5 days of hunting.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I personally know turkey hunters at home that will never in their lifetime see what the amount of turkey action that we witnessed here just in 4.5 days. I guarantee it.
Which is why, you know, my dad always says, you know, we have turkeys around here in Missouri.
Yeah.
People like my dad and even some turkey hunters don't understand why would you go drive for me and Keith. It's 13.5 hours for you, Derek. It's like 18.
Yeah.
Why drive that far? Why spend all that gas money? But
well, and especially
that's why
I had people asking, you know, I kept this kind of on the down low coming down, but the few people that didn't know, like in this times, why are you doing this? And what we've been talking about is why I did this. You know, I mean, some people like to go and sit on the beach for vacation. And, you know, for us and for me, the vacation, even though it was work, work, work on this the whole time and it was exhausting, it was to experience what we did. Yeah, I'm only taking home one turkey. And you know what? That's fine. I'm very happy with it. I don't really need to have 3 or 4 turkeys in the freezer. I'm going back with the memories, with a good time with, you know, with good friends, with the video footage. And it's just what I enjoy. And this is why we do it. This is why I drive 19 to 20 hours to do this.
I definitely been looking forward since last year, for the last couple months. It's pretty much, you know, very little of a day went by that I wasn't thinking about this trip. And so I hoping to come back again next year, and hopefully, you know, the rest of my life, as long as I can keep getting out there and keep moving, I want to keep coming down here and doing that kind of thing. Since it's definitely different. It's not even, I mean, to me, what I grew up with, you know, with turkey hunting, or what it was to me, this is a whole different sport, just a completely different ball game. So.
Yeah, and one thing that we haven't really touched on is, if we were shotgun hunting, we all most likely would have limited out with four.
Definitely.
You know, I mean, at least three apiece, if not four apiece. And even if we were body shooting birds and not caring about the video footage, especially, I know Derek and Keith, you would have had other birds down that you could have killed, you know, body shooting or taking longer shots or not trying to milk footage. And
you know, I had a gobbler at 4 yards, but I couldn't get the camera on quick enough.
Right,
that, you know,
right.
I wasn't willing to take a bird off camera. And that just happens when you're into filming and trying to produce a TV show. And that's part of it. Sometimes you got to take the bad with the good.
I mean, the way I look at it is, when we're all stacking the odds against us by bow hunting, by insisting that we're taking headshots at 5, 6, 7 yards, insisting we got good footage, all of those things. When you think about all of those, and there's three of us, and we all have birds in the cooler right now, that's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, it's seldom that you find, in my experience, three or four individuals who kind of have a like-minded mentality of how they want to turkey hunt. And we all are pretty much on the same page, exactly. And, you know, I get questions all the time, like, or comments that, well, all you're doing is target shooting because you're shooting them out of a blind with a bow. Why don't you do it without a blind? Real turkey hunters don't use decoys. They just call in birds and they shoot them with shotguns. All this, and you know, hey, to each their own. I've turkey hunted every way imaginable, and I really feel the way I enjoy the way I do it, or we do it, the three of us. But I also feel that when you start trying to pull birds and hold birds at 4, 5, 6 yards, do it on video, milk the footage on video as much as you can, trying to do headshots, being very selective, I really think that we stack the deck against us, because I guarantee that I could go out and kill a limit of birds down there a lot easier methods than we are. And right. Even the ranch manager was talking to us, and he's like, we had couple other guys come, they're shotgun hunters, you're like, you guys do this the hard way. I'm like, yeah, we do.
Well, the adrenaline rush is why I do it. And you know, I'm sure, I don't know if Robin wants me to mention this or not, but I'm going to, but just he's killed a whole bunch of birds. I'm telling you what, I filmed him a lot of hunts, and when the first time that bird comes in sight and he feels like it's coming in, I mean, he starts breathing a little heavier. By the time that it's in there, I'm ready to hand him a tank of oxygen, because he's just about to collapse. And that's, you know, that could be three or four birds into the trip, and he's still just that. So I know he gets a big kick out of it.
Yeah,
his breathing sounds like a cross between a gorilla and Darth
oh
Vader.
God.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, yes.
You know, everyone will understand whenever they watch pretty much any of my turkey hunts that are bow hunts, and it is no exaggeration to say that there's many times when I have a bird coming that I have to do breathing exercises to get myself back under control. And
I've got a second perspective GoPro in the blind for a couple of these hunts. And so, you know, it's funny to kind of go back and look at that, because not only you're hearing him breathe heavy, but you can literally see the look on his face like, all right, man, you can do this. You can do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm convinced that, unfortunately, one of these days, Robin's going to pass away.
or at least pass out.
I think he's going to pass away. And it will be one of us will have to walk up to a ground blind and we'll find him dead from a heart attack because of turkey.
Well, is there any better way to go?
No, there really isn't.
I hope you at least get your arrow off first.
Yeah, kill him, please. Yeah.
Yeah, you find me laying in the blind and there'd be a turkey out there without his head laying in the decoys.
Yeah.
That would probably be the ultimate way to go.
Well, I think that's about to wrap that the trip up.
We're about 55 minutes right now.
I mean, I'm glad that we all got to go. As I've said during this coronavirus pandemic crisis that we have going on in the world, we don't like to talk about it. We want these podcasts to be a little bit of an escape. But I think it would be a mistake to not let our listeners know that we all took very specific precautions in order to make this trip happen still, which includes our own self-quarantine times leading up to when we got to actually leave. We all had separate rooms where we were staying, where in the past we've shared a big bedroom, or I guess it's a bedroom, but a bunk room, really. But they were able to accommodate us with separate rooms. On the drive, we've used rubber gloves to pump gas. We have sanitizer, literally two or three bottles in the truck with us. And we've pretty much kept our distance from each other. But we really haven't came into contact with very many people in our travels, and that's been on purpose. So I hope that everyone understands that our goal is to stay smart, use common sense, and stay safe, and I hope everyone else is. So enough of that negativity. Keith, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about your show and where they can find you on social media and where the show airs.
Yeah, so it's Squincher Outdoors, and do a couple different things. We've got our YouTube channel, so we're constantly putting content up there. You can find us on Facebook to see the latest things that we're up to. I had posted several pictures from the trip on there. We also have a TV show that's televised out of the Branson Springfield area. It's pretty much the southwest quadrant of Missouri that we reach out, and also bleeds into Kansas and Arkansas. So we got a pretty good following down there. My partner Tony Weldley's a fishing guy down there in Branson, and one of these days I'm going to get him on this turkey trip. But he's usually really wrapped up this time of year with guiding his fishing trips. But I appreciate the chance to give us a plug. And Hot Shots is Hot Shot Archery has really been a big part of what we do. They're big supporters of our TV show and our content. And so a big thanks to Hot Shot and Dave White for being a big supporter. And please check us out. Again, that's Squincher Outdoors on the YouTube and Squincher Outdoors TV. All of our episodes, once they're aired, we can immediately put them on social media. So we do. So we upload them to YouTube. So not only can you see individual hunts, but you can watch the entire episodes from all three of our seasons. So that's me. How about you, Derek?
Yeah. So obviously, Derek Craig, you can find me on Facebook personally, but I've also ran and owned New Day Outdoors Productions for, 11 or 12 years now. And so basically on all social media, it's New Day Outdoors. So Instagram's at New Day Outdoors. I have a Twitter account, but I almost never check it, so you probably won't reach me there. I have a New Day Outdoors Facebook page. You can follow me there. I don't post a lot on that because anymore, it seems like Instagram and YouTube is the place to go. So they're really the best place to see a lot of my video work, and obviously I'll have edits of my hunts here. Would be go to YouTube and search New Day Outdoors and find that. And there's probably, I think last count, nearly 70 turkey hunting related videos just alone. And I know there's pushing close to 200 videos total on there. So check it out. Hit the subscribe button. That'd be great. It seems like it's growing exponentially lately, which I'm excited about. Finally, it just seems like it's taken off. But on there too, it's not just all hunting. I like when I video, I obviously like to do video work of hunting, but anymore I just like videoing other things. I like videoing life, not necessarily in a vlog type of format that's been overdone. But I've got a Saturday, Sunday, and 60-second series, which I've been doing now for, I think, almost 45 weeks straight, and I'm going to keep going with it. Plus, I always come up with this, what I think are things that I find interesting and creative, and some of them are last minute. So if you like videos, I think they're well done.
They're all right.
I try and get better each time, and that's the goal, is if the more I said this in a video I did recently, is if you want to be a good videographer for filming your hunts, then you need to film a lot more than just your hunts. You need to have that camera in your hand all the time, videoing anything you find interesting, because that is the way that you learn how a camera operates and how to get good at shooting video and editing. So go to my channel and check it all out. Hit like buttons. Please subscribe. That's me in a nutshell.
Right on, right on. And of course, I'm Robin Parks. I very rarely on this podcast talk about my own socials, but I will say that you could find me pretty much on Instagram and Facebook by either searching my name or Aim Low Robin or Aim and Low TV. And we have the Hotshot socials, of course, Hotshot Archery, both on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget, you can email us at any time with questions or feedback about the show at podcast@hotshotmanufacturing.com. And I think that's going to do it, guys. Let's sum it up. I killed three. How about you guys?
I killed one.
I killed a Jakezilla. I'm the only one on this trip that killed a Jakezilla.
That's right. Awesome trip. I hope everyone enjoyed hearing about it. Hit the subscribe button. Keep listening. Let us know what you like and don't like. And we'll see you next week.